Blog Talk Radio.
Metsian folk, considering this is our first episode of 2022, Happy New Year. I'm sure Larry David would have an issue with me saying it all the way in March, but we don't even have a Happy New Year yet when it comes to baseball, as MLB and the Major League Baseball Players Association continues to be at a dead heat. And I saw a tweet earlier that said, well, if they're deadlocked, would that mean that the lockout should be over, considering they're exactly where they need to be? But that's not exactly how any of this works, and we're going to get into some of how this works tonight on the Metsian podcast. Without further ado, let me bring on the brain trust, Mike LeColant. Mike, welcome back to the Metsian podcast in 2022. I wanted to also say, and since I'm throwing it over to you, Mike, we want to thank Baseball and Barbecue Podcast for having us on their podcast this week. Make sure you all listen to that. Mike.
Oh, most definitely. Appreciate those guys so much. It's great having good neighbors. Otherwise, as you say, Sam, welcome to baseball's Ides of March. Here we are. I wish we, you know, we were talking about spring training and the upcoming season, but no. You know, baseball's their own worst enemy. So here we are, and let's go about our business.
And Rich Spirago of Connecticut. Rich, it's always a pleasure, and it's been way too long. You're going to be able to get to dive deep into what exactly is going on. But first of all, how you doing, buddy?
I'm good, Sam, and I hope you're doing well, too. You know, and the thing I was thinking about as you were teeing this up, everybody uses that meme of the old lady from Titanic where, you know, it's been 86 years or 90s, whatever she's saying. Well, it's been 96 days for the lockout, and I feel like I should be her, you know, like a male version of her. It's been 96 days, and we haven't had any baseball to talk about. It's just, I don't know. No point in getting into it now. You know, we'll get into it as we go along in the show. But it's great to hear your voice. Great to hear Mike's voice. We've been sparse on baseball news, of course, so we haven't been able to get on the air much. There's just not a whole hell of a lot to talk about, but we're back now, and maybe that's a sign of better things to come.
Well, just looking at this tweet from 30 minutes ago, Baseball Night in New York on SNY, they're certainly trying their best to talk about something, and what they're talking about is the face of baseball in New York. Jacob deGrom, Aaron Judge, Francisco Lindor, how about Steve Cohen? You could tell right now people are trying to fill the time one way or another. whether it's Mets history, whether it's current history, I think we could always fill the time. But you can tell out there people are struggling one way or another. We need spring to talk about. This is what we do in March. We watch games and you know, like overemphasize a prospect's fastball. Mike. Other than wanting baseball back, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. You know, life marches on. I'm in retirement now, so life has changed, and then I'm trying to readjust. Otherwise, you know, as Rich said, we live this. This labor stoppage is nothing new to us. It's unfortunate. It's unpleasant. And you could throw a lot of other adjectives out there, but, you know, it is what it is. And baseball never leaves you or one without a shortage of subject matter. And I believe we have a ton before us.
We certainly do. Without further ado, tonight's resident local expert for us is going to be Rich Spirago on everything going on between the Major League Baseball owners and the Major League Baseball players. And Rich, please, just unload on us however you feel the need regarding all this stuff.
All right. Well, thank you for that, Sam. And with my work on Mesmerized Online, I have taken the mantle of being the lockout guy, which I hope is a title I could lose very soon. But anyway, in summary, it's really this. What it comes down to is you're hearing that they've agreed to certain things. And when we hear that, it gives us hope, right? Universal DH has been agreed to. A draft lottery has been agreed to, though not the same number of teams or proposed number of teams, but they'll work that out. So they've agreed to a couple of things, like the concept of a bonus pool for Super 2 players. Instead of allowing Super 2 players to go to arbitration, they've agreed to the concept of a bonus pool. They've even agreed on the percentage of those players with more than 2 years but less than 3 years of service who should be in the pool, 22%. Same as the Super 2s who are eligible for arbitration, so no change. And they've agreed on that. So when you hear these things, you're thinking, all right, well, okay, you know, they're agreeing on things. We've got to be making progress. They've also agreed on some rule changes. We'll talk about that later, I'm sure. I want to get into it here. But really what this lockout comes down to are the three core economic issues. And I'll get into them real quickly here. So the first one is where the good news is. The first one is when we talk about revenue sharing. Now, when the lockout first started, it was one of the core economic issues that was in dispute. Right now, teams share 48% of their local revenue. So that means things like ticket sales, merchandise, parking, concessions, all those things. 48% of the revenue is put in a pile and shared among all the teams. So you have, you know, obviously teams that are contributing more because their 48% is higher, teams that are contributing less and receiving more. Okay, so, but the players initially wanted less revenue to be shared. They initially wanted that to drop to 30%. They've dropped that request. And so now in the next CBA, it'll be 48%. So that's good. One of three core economic issues, done, sealed, signed, sealed, delivered. So you start to think, all right, well, two more. Okay, moving to the next one. The next one is what I call compensation of pre-arbitration players. It has two parts. The first part is the minimum salary. They're getting closer. In the old CBA, the minimum salary was $570,500. The owners started out really low at $600,000. Players wanted, you know, like $780,000, whatever it was. But where they are now is the owners have put $700,000 on the table to start with a $10,000 escalation every year of the CBA. So 7, 10, 20, 30, 40, 50. Players are at a starting bid, shall we say, of $740 with $20,000 increments for the first 3 years, and then the last 2 years indexed against inflation. So, nah, you know, they could probably figure that one out. Let's say they could figure that one out. The next part of the pre-arbitration compensation of the second, so like I said, issue number two, core economic two, has two parts. So we talked about minimum salary. The other one is what we just talked about the bonus pool. How much money should be in the bonus pool? Well, they've agreed to the percentage of players, but they're way off on the amount of money that those players should get. The union is asking for $80 million, and the owners are asking for or are willing to put in $30 million, so they have a gap there. Now, the third core economic issue standing in the way of a CBA, and this is the big one, this is the huge one, is the competitive balance tax. So let me break this down real quick. The competitive balance tax has two parts. We'll start the easy one. The easy one is the amount of tax they pay. What's the percentage of the amount you go over that you are taxed? The owners wanted to raise that to this ridiculous amount in the next CBA. They wanted it to be 80% the first time you go over on the amount you go over, and then 100% on the amount you go over for your second offense and on, okay? And the players are like, oh, hell no. And the owners have dropped that. The owners are willing to keep the tax level the same as it is in the current CBA. So the huge issue is the threshold. At what point does the tax kick in? In the current CBA right now, it's $210 million in 2010. The owners have proposed raising it to 2020 and then very, very small incremental raises for the 5 years. The players have said, no, we don't want to start at 220. We want to start at 238. and we want to go all the way to 267. So what you have is, you know, the curves separate pretty quickly. The Kaplan-Meier line there separates very quickly. The players want it to go up precipitously, and the owners want it to inch up by like a million or two a year. That right there, guys, is really what's holding this up. They could probably figure out the minimum salary. They could probably figure out the arbitration, the amount of money in the bonus pool. But this, you have an enormous difference. It's philosophical to a degree because the players are saying it acts as a salary cap. Baseball shouldn't have a salary cap, and they want it to be much higher. The small market owners are saying we can't compete if it goes too high because then the Yankees, Mets, Dodgers, Red Sox, insert name of team, will just spend whatever the hell they want with no restraint. The restraint will be at a very high level, and we can't compete. And that's really, guys, that one issue is what's holding us up. The other ones are there, but they could probably be bridged. They've got to somehow come to some kind of agreement on this threshold for the competitive balance tax. Now, I'll leave it at this. We've heard about playoff expansion. Okay. They go to 14 teams, $100 million extra dollars comes the owner's way. So if the players agree to that, obviously they're going to say, we just gave you a huge playoff field with huge money. You're going to raise that CBT threshold. That's where we are. It's going to come down to a this for that. If the players agree to it, and we heard on Friday that they might, to the 14-team playoff format, the owners are going to have to give, and they're not going to have to give from 220 to 222. They're going to have to get into 230s, get much closer to the players for year one, and then get much closer to the players on the increment. So in a nutshell, in like a five-minute speech, that's where we are. It really, guys, if they could figure out the CBT threshold, the other things will fall into place.
I feel like my face right now is that one of the gifts with, like, you know, what was it, Dr. Phil flinching. Like, he can't fathom all the information all at once. And just like I immediately think when regarding the playoff part, that the 14-team playoff part works within the context of expanding the 32 teams eventually, but that's us getting into the weeds there, which we will do at some point on here. Mike, where are you after hearing everything he just unloaded?
First of all, I'll start with expansion, and that just creates more whiners, okay? More gimme, 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 I need help, help, help. You know, Rich, that dollar figure of 220 million, that cracks me up because the Yankees were spending that 20 years ago. 20
yep.
years ago, the Yankees were spending that. So that is completely hypocritical, and it's really an insult to our intelligence. This cracks me up. This really cracks me up, and I fully expect this. You know, once upon a time, when Marvin Miller and Bowie Kuhn together had to usher in free agency into the game, the owners have been trying to protect themselves from themselves ever since. And that fairy tale goes all the way back to the 1800s. I'm not going there. But ever since free agency, think about it. Peter Uberoth told the owners, you need to control your spending, guys. So what happened? They colluded together and they were found guilty. So when collusion didn't work, and new stadiums and luxury suites didn't work, and passing costs off to the customers didn't work, and the advent of regional networks didn't work, and this preposterous salary tax, you know, isn't working to their satisfaction as well, and now there is revenue redistribution because we know some teams will spend it and some teams will pocket it. None of this has worked, and this is, if you want to put it through the translator, it's all about free agency. It's not about thresholds, this, that. It's about free agency and owners trying to protect themselves from other owners. That's the part of this that is over 140 years old. And it still rules the playing field. I'll leave it at that. I don't want to go off in the range because I got a lot of things to say. But to me, this is nothing new. This is nothing new. And this has everything to do with free agency. And the attempt to corner Steve Cohen as the villain in this is just mind-boggling to me. And it's childish. It's so hypocritical. Look back. And Rich, again, that $220 million threshold, again, that's just people don't have memories? People don't know how negotiations have gone in the past? That's only recent past. George Steinbrenner was doing that on a yearly. So, you know, baseball is unique from the other sports, and I'm not going to go here yet, but I will later. Baseball has always been unique from the other leagues. Go ahead, Sam. Don't let me go there yet. I want to know.
Hold it up. We do have a phone caller, but before them, I'll ask you this, Rich, in terms of that whole pocketing thing, which is something that has been brought up regarding the small market teams. Do you think, and I don't know who could implement this, how this could actually get done, or whether this needs to be collectively bargained. And again, if it were, we probably would never have baseball again because the owners would never agree to it. But do you think that the revenue sharing should, like, the pocketing should be outlawed and in some fashion, kind of like the way that you have to do it with some college schools? And mind you, it kind of gets crazy, and they end up having they spend a ton on improving their athletic facilities, but at least it's being reinvested somehow, some way. So, what do you do here? Is there some way to make sure that that money gets reinvested?
Well, you could talk about a salary floor, and I'm a bit surprised that that was on the table about January timeframe when they first started talking, that it was an idea that the owners floated, actually, and the players were like, well, the reason the players rejected it was the owners tied strings to it. They said, we'll do $100 million salary floor, but we want to do $180 million, Mike. I don't want to imagine this. $180 million on the threshold for the luxury tax. So it was like, well, you know, and 14 teams, guys, can you believe this? 14 teams last year had payrolls of less than $100 million, and several had payrolls in the $40 to $50 million range. So the owners were saying, well, if we put $100 million floor, you have 14 teams that have to spend more, and of those 14 – some of them have to spend $60 million more, $50 or $40 million more. That's putting a lot more money into circulation. So why don't you accept a luxury tax threshold of $180? Well, the players are like, yeah, thanks, but no thanks. We don't want it if it has those strings attached. So that's probably why we don't hear anything about salary floors at this point. Doesn't mean that it won't come back, because – anything has to be on the table. You guys probably heard the Randy Levine with Michael Kay today. I heard snippets of it. I read snippets. It's all over the internet now. He basically said, we have to figure this out. Any solution has to be on the table. This is embarrassing for our sport. And he said all the right things. Like, he didn't say it was our fault as a teams, but he said, you know, it's our problem as an industry, and we have to figure it out. So maybe a salary floor comes back, but there's no way the players will accept the 100. Yeah, $30 million reduction from where the luxury tax threshold was in 2021. So it's been bandied about. It would be a way to get more money into circulation and to stop the kind of, you know, crappy Baltimore Orioles, Pittsburgh Pirates, where they spend nothing. It would be a way to do that. But on the other hand, if the only way to get it there, to get it into the discussion, is by really having a very low luxury tax threshold, it'll never fly.
Here on the Metzian podcast, we have a 516 area code. Go for 516. How are you doing tonight?
Hey, Sam. How you doing?
I knew it.
It's Jeff Cohen here from Baseball and BBQ.
I had a feeling, Jeff, that you would be calling in, and welcome. And again, it's always a pleasure to be on your show as well. We do have a lot of cross-promotion constantly, so we appreciate you being on here. Before we get into the weeds, Jeff, please tell everybody where they can find you and where they can find Baseball and BBQ.
Oh, thanks. Apple Podcasts, Baseball and BBQ, we have the great Metzian podcast on this week, so check it out. www.baseballandbbq.weebly.com. Thanks, but that's not the reason I called. I mean, I just wanted to weigh in on some of the things. I'm very angry. I want to get some things off my chest, and I agree totally with what Mike said. You know, there's a couple of owners that we came out this week that did not want to agree to the deal, and it was the Tigers, the Reds, the Diamondbacks, and the Angels, which I find the Angels one really particularly gets me upset because they don't want to raise the competitive balance tax, yet they signed Noah Syndergaard to $21 million, who pitched two innings last in 2 years. He's kind of crazy, don't you think?
Yeah, that does sound a bit hypocritical, and I'll go around. Jeff, you can stay for a little bit?
Up for a little bit. I mean, I don't want to intrude on your time, but, you know, I just wanted to get that off my chest.
Yeah, absolutely. And Mike, since he did mention you by name as well, go ahead with where Jeff left it.
And I thank you, sir, for the kind words. You know, let's pick it up with Mr. Romero. He's the richest man from Mexico. And think about the terms that we have to use. In a free market society, capitalists spend. They're looking to alter the system of operation and the way they do business. And if he can get that imposed, his spending will be curtailed. He's in a win-win situation. He doesn't care. So maybe he is propping up the smaller market teams who are crying for help. Who knows? You see, but listen to the terms that we have to deal with. This is collectively bargained stuff. Union versus owners. Union versus capitalists. You know, but that's not what the owners want. Meanwhile, they could just turn around and sell their, you know, quote-unquote industry for a billion and a half, 2 billion. So they want protection from themselves at the player's expense. That's not free market. So if Moreno is operating in a free market, he's going to spend because he can. But if they alter the business model, well, then his spending will be curtailed and he gets to pocket more. The collective bargaining agreement has no effect on him and, say, Mr. Cohen and perhaps a few others. Maybe the L.A. Dodgers group, maybe the Boston Red Sox group, Mr. Henry. He's been known to spend a good dollar, you know. But what about all these other teams, you know? And expansion fees only makes these other owners happy for a day or two. That money goes poof. So more expansion is just going to ask for more baseball welfare. So I don't know how they're going to resolve this, actually.
You know, I just want to say one other thing. I've been reading a lot on Twitter and stuff that, you know, a lot of the owners didn't want to buy the Mets and whatnot, and this is really him going crazy spending. But you know what? They had no problem, you know, having their value of their franchise increased with Cohen's purchase of the Mets. I mean, it went up exponentially, and you know, it went up so much. Yet they want to blame Cohen for that. It's ridiculous.
I mean, you know, if they really want to blame, I mean, like, if they don't want him to, like, they say all these owners wanted to buy the Mets, that means there were a lot of reluctant yes votes, basically. So I just, you know, everybody's in control of their own situation. more or less. So I really, part of it,
they're looking for a bailout. It's as simple as that. They want a bailout. Just like the banks once upon a time and other industries once upon a time. They want a bailout. This is what they're asking for, and it's coded free agency.
You know, I just wonder, like, we've all said, like, how come they weren't negotiating every single day? December, you can understand maybe wanting to take off. A lot of times things don't get done around the holidays anyway, one way or another. But it would be very interesting to have a lawyer on here to talk about what it actually means when they say they're not meeting. Because in this day and age, I guess there could be plenty of text messages and casual phone calls going back and forth. But, Rich, I guess for one thing, like I've conspiratorialized, it keeps them in the news, like not having everything be status quo, even if it's actually having baseball. There's more no news is, no press is bad press. I that's just my only conspiratorializing of why they couldn't get this done prior to this entire thing. Like they weirdly backwards thought process think this could actually increase their exposure over time.
Well, that's an interesting take on it, Sam. My take is a bit different. I think that both sides are trying to run out the clock, and they're playing by different clocks. So when you think about who has leverage in a negotiation situation, let's talk about that for a moment. At what point do the players start to lose money? Well, they would get their first paycheck on something we talked about before on the air, April 15th. They'd get their first check on April 15th for games played March 31st, April 15th. Well, if you don't start the season until April 15th, that's one entire paycheck off the board. So the owners know that, and the owners also know that 68% of Major League Baseball players make less than $1 million a year. Now, that's still a lot of money. If you make $500, $800, $900, whatever it is, you're making good money. But, you might not be so excited about missing a paycheck. If you're Max Scherzer making $43 million or his old contract, $26 million a year, you could probably stand to miss that paycheck. But 68% of guys are looking at it a little differently. And, yes, there's a war chest or whatever. We don't know how much is there and how that'll work. So let's take that off the table. So the owners think about this. The players are going to get itchy because they don't want to miss that first paycheck. So if we could not start until April 15th or later, if nothing else, we've sent a message. We've sent a message to these guys like, look, you mess with us, it's going to hit you in the pocketbook, and aren't we tough guys? Okay. Now, when do the owners start to feel some pain? Well, you can look at it like this. I read this on ESPN. Most regional sports networks will start getting refunds from the teams at the point of somewhere between 18 and 30 games missed. So it was an article by Jeff Passan. So if you think about that, it's a little bit, just a little bit later than when the players might start to feel their pain. Maybe around late April, very early May, these teams will have to start refunding their regional sports networks because they didn't have the content on TV. So maybe that's when the owners start to feel some pain. So that's a leverage point perhaps for the players. And then the other piece is a little bit more obvious. You get more people in the ballpark after around Memorial Day. So at that point, are the owners thinking about that? So what I think the reason for the delay is, and I believe this to be true, it could be what you said, but this is my opinion, is that both sides have a clock that they think the other side is working on, and they're trying to use that clock to their advantage, just like they're trying to use everything else in these entire negotiations to their advantage, but they're trying to use the clock to their advantage, and the clock, like I said, is a little bit different for both sides. That's why I think it's taking so long. I think both sides see time as their ally until the point that time becomes their enemy.
You know, it's very interesting. We were talking about the date, Jeff, April 15th, of being the 75th anniversary of Jackie Robinson making his debut. And so it's strange that a moment of such profound, not just for a baseball player, but also for this entire country, happens to be where, right now at this point, whether that is also being negotiated behind the scenes and looked to as the perfect symbolic opening for baseball, April 15th, the owners would then indeed think that they have won, as Rich points out, because that would be the first game and that paycheck would be missed by the players. So it's fascinating to me that Jackie Robinson Day may be used as leverage by the owners, but we were also talking about how embarrassing it would be for the sport to miss Jackie Robinson Day this year on the 75th anniversary.
I think they'll miss April 15th, unfortunately. That would be a symbolic, like you said, day to open. But what Rich said, I think what you said, 18 to 30 games, they're going to feel the pain. I think it's going to get to that. I think the season's going to start sometime in May, unfortunately. That's my view. I have it's just my sense of it. I think the owners don't care if they miss April for all the other reasons Rich gave. Except opening day, they don't draw. It's cold in most places. They don't make any money. They'll only make money when the TV revenue comes in, and I think they're okay missing the month of April.
Mike, I'm looking it up now. I don't even know when the Brooklyn Cyclones start, but it would be quite nice if we can go to MCU Park on April 15th. Hey, Mikey!
Sorry about that. The Cyclones would indeed be somewhere in Coney Island, somewhere to be and hang out in April.
They would be facing Jersey Shore on Friday, April 15th.
There you go.
At 7 p.m.
That would be a great place to be if there's no MLB, but it would still be a great place to be nonetheless. That would be the first time a professional baseball team from Brooklyn plays in the borough in April since the Dodgers left town. So I'm looking forward to that historic day. I plan on being there.
And speaking of which, Rich, they are giving out a 42 hat at that game at MCU Park. So obviously they are well aware of the 75th anniversary of somebody making history in Brooklyn.
Well, that's good. Good for them. And like we talked about before we went on the air, you know, like, Jeff, I have to agree with you. The odds of baseball being on the field for games that count on April 15th are pretty low. They'd have to have an agreement by Friday to do that at the absolute latest, and they're not even talking it. There's not even a negotiation plan for tomorrow yet. So it's pretty unlikely. And it's a shame. It's a shame. You know, one of the things about this thing, guys, is everything we talked about earlier, bonus pools and minimum salaries and competitive balance tax thresholds and all of that, there's something else in these negotiations. Both sides want to win. Both sides want to beat the other side because they don't like the other side. This is real. There are reports coming out of the nine-day-long negotiations in Florida that at times Bruce Meyer – and Dan Halem were yelling at each other, like literally yelling at each other. They're not only trying to win the negotiation and the best deal for the owners, best deal for the players. They're like divorcing spouses. They're trying to beat each other because they no longer like each other and have animosity toward each other. So the odds of this getting done this week, so Jackie Robinson Day could be salvaged, are extremely remote. But you know what? Let them take the public relations hit when Jackie Robinson Day does come. Let them take the hit for that because it's their own fault.
And Jeff, something Mike and I have been talking about, and I occasionally bring it up on Twitter, is that baseball isn't dying. Major League Baseball is dying. And like we are pointing to, on the 12th, Mike and I, and it looks like I'm going to have to take the 15th off to make sure I am there on Jackie Robinson Day as well. Baseball is going to be there for us. And I almost I spun it on Twitter as an optimist that this is going to allow other sources of baseball, other institutions of baseball that don't get much as much notice as Major League Baseball to possibly grow their audience because of the fans who want to see baseball. I mean, college baseball has gotten bigger over the years. And maybe even I was, you know, at the beginning of your podcast, you have somebody from the Women's Baseball League. There's many different places this can go, and I think that's what Major League Baseball doesn't understand, is that even not only are they losing fans and possibly losing an entire generation of children, but they may eventually lose eyeballs to the biggest diehards of us, because there's other places we can go to get baseball, as much as we are giant Met fans, and the history of Major League Baseball in both our city and around the country.
You're absolutely right. We are fortunate to live in an area where you guys, the Brooklyn Cyclones. Now we have the new Staten Island Ferry Hook out here by me. I have the Long Island Ducks. Upstate, you have teams. Down in Jersey, you have teams. We're lucky that we can go spend our baseball dollars somewhere else. And I already said on Twitter, I'm going to a couple of Ducks games. It's only a couple of miles from my house, so you know it's convenient and we can watch baseball. And it's going to be very good level baseball. Is it going to be Major League Baseball? No. But it's going to be a very good competitive baseball, and there's nothing wrong with that. And I would encourage everybody, go to a local college game. Go to an independent baseball game. Go to the minor leagues. You know, you said Brooklyn Cyclones and Upstate and Binghamton and Syracuse and all the other towns. Support them. Absolutely.
Rich, you know, have you been watching baseball anywhere else? I know that, like, I've been catching a few college baseball clips. I really should be watching some games because I do have access online to ESPN. So what have you been doing during this entire time to fill the baseball need?
You know, I haven't been watching. I haven't watched any live baseball at all since the World Series. And maybe I should. I have no objection to it. It's just I haven't. I have done a headlong dive into this lockout, and, you know, between writing about the facts and writing about suggestions and all of that, it's kind of become an unfortunate hobby. So that has, and I think I'm playing right into their hands, right? I'm consuming my time with their strife and their discord rather than their product. But I have been headlong into the lockout. So We have some minor league baseball here in Connecticut. It's a little bit of a drive for me, but no problem. I'd consider doing that when April rolls around. They play the Mets double-A team, so maybe that's worth going to. But let's hope it doesn't come to that. Let's hope that – I'm holding out hope that sometime in April we have major league baseball. And if we don't by that point, maybe I will try to fill my baseball desires by going to some minor league games.
You know, Mike, at some point, I do want to get to the Mets a little bit, because that is what this podcast is about. But we haven't had much new stuff to talk about, of course, although there is still speculation out there about certain things. But, Mike, I know that you are able to get some baseball fill and remind everybody that they can, too, in the winter with Winter League Baseball.
Oh, hell yeah. Hell yeah. Usually kicks up right after the World Series. And, you know, if you're into it, you can entertain yourself from November all the way to February, you know, with international and Winter League Baseball. But all this talk, I just want to remind everyone of what the owners already did and how they radically altered the minor league system, how they imperialized the independent leagues. And so this lockout, to me, is just part of one, you know, giant comprehensive plan that the owners have. You know, we always keep saying Manfred, 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 but, you know, we know he's just the front man for the owners who pay this person to take all the grief that we spit their way. But let us not forget what the owners did already to date and continue to do with this lockout. They radically altered the minor leagues. They imperialized the independent leagues. And to me, this lockout is in lockstep with their behavior over the last couple of years.
Rich, what would it take for the minor leagues to unionize? Because it does seem like there's this entire majority group of people within these ranks, like Mike talks about, that are getting completely shafted throughout all of this. And they're only, you know, you're only fighting for when the few eventually possibly make their debut, but everybody else is getting left behind. You know, Todd Pratt, of course, infamously said on Twitter that they should just shut up and take it. But I personally think he failed to realize that it's a new era of cost of living and so many different nuances to discuss when discussing the minor league player.
Yeah, you know, in terms of what it would take for them to unionize, I imagine it would be very difficult to unionize minor league players because they go from team to team so quickly. Like you go from single A to double A to triple A. And while they're affiliated with a major league franchise, there's always some degree of local ownership too and local interest. So with whom would you collectively bargain? Would you collectively bargain with the major league team? Or would you collectively bargain with the local teams who, you know, take the Mets by way of example. So you've got Syracuse and you've got Binghamton, right, AAA and AA respectively. While they're affiliated with the Mets, they have their own interests. Like they have their own local revenue, their own local stadium and all that kind of stuff. So I'm not sure that the Mets could collectively bargain terms for Binghamton and Syracuse, and I don't think Binghamton could collectively negotiate that would impact Syracuse. So I'm guessing that would be a mitigating factor where you have the different levels, the different ownership interest at the different levels, although affiliated with the major league club. I'm guessing that's a really big part of why they can't organize because I don't know how you could. I don't know who you'd collectively bargain with, especially when these guys go from AAA to AA and back and all that kind of stuff. So, but the conditions for these minor league players are just ridiculous. I mean, you know, you see it all the time. You see it where they're trying to get, you know, better on the meal money and all that kind of stuff. And it really, what it does to me is I've never begrudged professional athletes the money they make. They're elite at what they do. And they deserve whatever the market will give them. Yes, I wish teachers and firefighters and police officers and the like made more money too, but can't control that at this point. So I've never begrudged them, but this is all the more reason because when you think about the small percentage that actually make it and what these guys have to go through, basically living below the poverty line to try to realize a shot at their dream, I mean, geez, it's just, all the more respect, all respect to them.
It's so tough. Like you lay it out so perfectly as to how it could get done, and maybe there'll be maybe one day there will be a Marvin Miller who figures it out. Maybe it is indeed too hard to figure out. And I want to go back to you, Jeff, but I'm wondering if you know this, Mike. Do the Wilpons still own the Cyclones?
No, the Cyclones are owned by Steve Cohen.
Okay, so that was completely a package deal for you.
Yeah.
Jeff, where do you want to go with this?
where do I want to go with this? That's a good question. I don't know where I want to go with this. I'm so all over the place with it. You know what I mean? I mean, I don't think these parties are that far apart. Seriously, they can't be really that far apart. I know the competitive balance tax, the owner at 220, the players at 238, make it 230 and move on. I mean, come on. There's got to be some type of reconciliation they can do this. It's crazy.
It's going to be 229.5.
Yeah, exactly. I do agree with Mike. I'm sorry. I'm not sure who said it. Rich or Mike said that Sarge has to claim victory. I know that the players thought this at the last collective bargaining agreement, they lost. As soon as they signed the agreement, they knew they lost in terms of, you know, winning and losing. So they're dug in. They're going to do everything they can to win, in quotes, this round of negotiations. And And there's going to be bragging rights to it, I think. It's not about what's right for the game, what's best for the game. It's who won, which is a terrible mentality to take for, you know, the millions of baseball fans out there.
One of the biggest problems is that the owners won't, and they don't have to, open up their books. So the union doesn't trust them. When owners float dollar figures, the union, you know, they say, no, you're lying to me. Show me the books. And the owners never do. And that's why there's always that stalemate. The union just doesn't trust. And just
as
when we thought they were, you know, every time, how many times did we think, oh, there's no way they can make that much money. There's no way they could. And the dollar figures keep going up and up and up. And meanwhile, it's not always the big market team. There's always one owner out there. And we can name numerous teams who've committed this act. The Rockies, they're one. They signed one, two, three big, big money players. And within 2 years, they traded them away and tried ridding themselves of that contract. The Marlins are no different. Giving Giancarlo Stanton that over $300 million contract. That was the Marlins. And what did they do? Within 2 years, they traded them away.
Well, Tampa Bay with Wander Franco.
You know, so there's always
Wanda
that
Franco
one idiot out there. There's always that one guy who's going to go against the group and ruin it for everyone, and that's what the owners want, protection from themselves.
Exactly right. No,
it's so very depressing. Jeff, go ahead. Sorry.
No, I'm just agreeing with Michael where, you know, I was saying, I don't know if you heard me, but Wanda Franco signed $300 million for the cash-strapped Tampa Bay Rays. And obviously, the money's there.
And this is a perfect segue for me. This is a perfect segue, too, Jeff, for me, because it's so very depressing that I want to fantasize about certain players potentially coming to the Mets. And your segue was perfect because there was this rumor that the Tampa Bay Rays offered Freddie Freeman a contract prior to the lockout. Rich, I'll go to you next. I don't know how much credence to give that, but what I do know is that there were also some rumors about Freddie Freeman being in the mix for the Mets. And I think that when you talk about the fact that it's going to be a universal DH this year, which is a whole other can of worms to open up at some point. I don't want to do it now, but putting Pete Alonso at DH and bringing Freddie Freeman in here is such a – especially with Dominic Smith's perfect position of being generally a left fielder but able to back up both of those guys. It's just he's one of those players that I don't know if I've seen a more consistent bat and approach of the elite players over the last 10 to 15 years than Freddie Freeman. And, man, would I love him on my team. And he can't be the next chipper because I love him so much. It's just pure jealousy watching him on the Braves.
Hey, guys, something just came across on Twitter. I'm going to read it. I'm going to read it in real time here. And I'm going to answer your question in a second, Sam. So Evan Drellich from The Athletic, who's incredibly good and also incredibly credible, 3 minutes ago, tweet, sources, MLB, MLBPA lawyers met today, planning to meet tomorrow. MLB has suggested Tuesday as a deadline in its eyes for three things. Play 162 games and for players to get full pay and full service time. But pay, service, and schedule can't be unilaterally chosen, need to be negotiated. So what I'm taking from that, first of all, anything Evan says is gold, so that's that. They see this ostensive. This is definitely a leverage thing, no question. But there is a sense of urgency being put on the table. I'm encouraged that the lawyers met today because we thought there was no contact today. And by setting tomorrow as a deadline for a deal to try to sneak in 162, isn't that interesting? Rob gets up there a week ago and says, nope, not making up the games. They're canceled. Sorry, guys, don't mess with us. Well, you know what? Get a deal tomorrow, we'll play 162. Isn't that amazing? So this is interesting. Sorry to interrupt, but I found this fascinating. But let me get back to your
thank you.
Yeah. No, no problem. I stalked him on Twitter. He's amazing. So let me get back to what you were talking about with Freddie Freeman. Look, I love Freddie Freeman. He's the guy who kills you, but you love him anyway. He'd be great on the Mets, but you know what? No, just no. The Mets, he would be a great shiny toy. I would freaking buy the T-shirt. I would love to have him, but no. The Mets don't need Freddie Freeman. The Mets need additional starting pitching more than they need anything else. They need depth. My God, you watched this team last year, and it's a neon sign flashing. They need major league pitching depth, starting pitching depth in particular, and even more so with Stroman gone. So any money they would spend on Freeman, as much as I would love to have him, he's a great personality, a great human, as much as I would love to have the guy, give me that money back, and I'll spend it on pitching. Maybe that's an unpopular opinion, but no, just no. They've got to get pitching. This team needs pitching more than it needs another bat, and I know he's a great bat. Anyway, so that's my answer. But, you know, getting back to your original point, if the Rays can make an offer to Freddie Freeman and then cry poor, it's like, you know what, owners? You didn't have a whole lot of credibility going into this, and when we hear stuff like that, you have zero credibility now. You do. Teams are poor. They can't spend money. They can't compete. The Tampa Bay Rays, the poster children for building with austerity and all that kind of stuff, are willing to go after the number one prize on the free agent market, and you're trying to tell me they have no money? Please, guys, come on. Stop it. Just stop. So don't insult me anymore.
Yeah, and also, didn't Juan Soto turn down like $350 million you know, at the end of last season, the thing's going to get $400 or $500 million.
That's according to him in an interview, too.
Right. And obviously the money's there. Guys, I'm going to let you go. Thank you for having me on. I appreciate it. Guys, have a great show.
Thanks so much. Jeff Cohen of the Baseball and Barbecue Podcast, along with his co-host, Len Averman. Go check it out. Mike and I were on this week as the Mets Team podcast team. Go check it out. Thanks, Jeff. We greatly appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff.
So, guys, let's go around the horn. First of all, I'll start with you, Rich. Anything that you want to cover regarding all of the, getting into the weeds of all of this before we go anywhere?
Well, I think at some point we should talk about the rule changes because that is is a nice segue out of collective bargaining because it is part of collective bargaining. The players have agreed to allow MLB to put those three rule changes in for 23 with 45 days notice as opposed to 100. So I think we should touch on them because they all impact the game. So that's my thing.
So just remind me what those rule changes are going to be for 2023. Remind our audience as well.
Sure. Pitch clock, 14 seconds to deliver a pitch to the plate. If there is if there's no one on base, 19 seconds. If there's a runner on, larger bases, I'm not sure how much larger, but larger bases. Concept being, A, protect the players. They could use the bag as like the Ruben Tejada thing with Chase Utley, could use the bag as protection. And then probably more importantly than that, though, those couple of inches could encourage more stolen bases, which is what the fan wants. Then number three, the big one, is no more shifting, outlaw the shift.
Yeah, let's start with the pitch clock, and I'll just touch upon, Mike, there used to be pitchers that didn't need a pitch clock at all, and R.A. Dickey was one of them to me. He was, and I have video footage that I could go back to for my own DSLR in the early last decade that would show you how quick he was. And he must have been 10 to 12 seconds at most, I swear, 10 to 12 seconds at most to the plate. He worked extremely fast, and Josh Tolley knew it and was ready to go with him. What do you think is up? What do you think? I guess there's always been some slow pokes, but it seems to have gotten worse and worse over time.
I don't know. All I know is that the game can be played in 2.5 hours, certainly under 3 hours. It can be played without, you know, having to change all these rules. But I'm at the point where I don't know anymore. You know, I just don't know anymore. This is not the game I grew up and grew a passion for, and it never will be again. So it's a matter of me either adjusting and embracing this change along with other changes that came along the way, or like I always say, the more the modern game pisses me off, the more I go into its path. So, you know, I'll end off by saying, Sam, I don't know. All I know is it can be done without all this. I'm saddened by all these changes. I'll embrace it, maybe. Hopefully it won't affect the game too much, in my view at least.
So, Rich, what do you think about all those changes? And where, you know, start wherever you want to.
Pitch clock, no. Because pitch clock means you're going to have more injuries. These guys are used to pitching a certain way, taking a certain amount of time between pitches, you know, stretching out the arm. You see DeGrom do it all the time. Every time Jake is, you know, shaking his arm on the mound, I'm like, oh, my God, I'm making the sign of the cross. Please tell me he's not hurt. But it's what they do. No, I literally do that. I'm not even kidding. I wish I were kidding. So you're taking these guys out of a rhythm that, in the case of DeGrom, I mean, the man's 34 years old. You know, he's done this for a while. Scherzer's 37 years old. He's done it a longer while, right? So I think that's bad, bad, bad. I think that's horrible. I think we will see injuries. When it comes to the shift, you know, I could warm up to that. I don't like it because, to me, I've always said, well, let guys go back to being hitters where, you know, like Mike, you and I watched Pete Rose for years going the other way and take what the pitcher gives you, blah, Rod Carew, all of that. But you know what? You can't fight City Hall on this one. These guys, they don't do that. They're not trained that way anymore. So maybe the only way to get that ridiculous shift out of the game that, you know, that I hate is maybe you have to outlaw it. I don't like having to say that, but if it gets it out of the game, you have to have two infielders on each side of second base, every batter. You know what? While I don't like it, I'll go for it. The larger bases, well, you know, that's the same thing. I want more stolen bases in the game. I want more hitting and running. I'm begging for that stuff. If the only way I'm going to get it is with larger bases, I'll take it. I don't like it, but I'll take it. The reason I don't like the larger bases is, well, what about Ricky Henderson's record of stolen bases? So you're going to say somebody else might break his record, but that guy had to go 3 inches less or 4 inches less to get to the bag? It's not the same thing. You know, your records are going to be bastardized, right? And if you think that that's not a big deal, it's a huge deal. Look at these stolen bases when guys are called out or when you have the replay. They're out by a millimeter. You give them 3 or 4 more inches, you're going to have more successful stolen bases. And, yes, I like it. I love it. Bring it. But the problem is, you know, you're kind of messing with the history of the game, and you just – I guess you have to take one to get the other. That's where I stand. Where do you stand, Sam?
Mm-hmm. It's interesting because I'm going to play contrarian here only to play contrarian, but it's something interesting to bring up, and I've thought about this over the last while regarding that baseball holds its history up arguably more than any sport because we have the longest history. But what's so interesting about the comparing and contrasting of numbers that we constantly do, and I think it was when Pete Alonso brought up the changing of baseballs that I started to realize that the entire history of baseball may be attached 22 anyway, in terms of the way we hold that history up. And this could play into it, and I'll go to you next, Mike, in that baseball has always – we're comparing, regardless of like 162 games it took Roger Maris to get 61 home runs, versus Babe Ruth, who took 154 to get 60, they still also had to do it in different conditions of ballparks. We hold these records up, whether it's stolen bases are really the only record until now, like you're talking about, to have an even keel across, other than maybe you could get into the conditions of the field, of course. However, nothing's really changed over the years regarding how far apart the bases are between each other. But you're talking about Roger Maris had to do it in a different Yankee Stadium. Well, actually, I think at the time it was still the same dimensions, but every ballpark over the years has generally had different dimensions. So everybody is already dealing with a different set of conditions. So it's interesting when we're thinking about it because, I don't think anybody, even with the change, I don't think that would all of a sudden increase stolen bases to the point of doing it as prolifically as other people did, including Reyes in his prime. But, Mike, where are you with everything? Right there, everything that we just went into regarding that part.
Baseball has always been different. If you're a sports fan, you've always looked at baseball differently. Baseball precedes all other leagues. It precedes the NFL. It precedes the NHL. It precedes the NBA. They've always maintained a business model that made them unique. You know, the National League and the American League, and if you want to throw the American Association in there, they merely made peace. And out of that, a World Series evolved from that. You know, whereas the NFL is a league of three. They're a conglomeration of the old American Football Conference, the NFL, and the AFL. So they interplay. The NHL. They're an amalgamation of the original six, expansion, and the WHA. So they interplay. The association. They're a conglomeration of, you know, the old NBA, the ABA, and like the other leagues, expansion. Baseball has never merged. It was always the National League office and the American League office. And at the end of the season, they played a World Series, but they operated independently. Therefore, no interleague, you know. But I talked about Bowie Kuhn. I talked about Peter Uberoth, you know, and the owners. And I'm going to vent now. And the owners, you know what? In my opinion, they were threatened by people with integrity. And as you said earlier in this show, Sam, men who had the best interests of baseball first and foremost on their minds, a Bartlett Giamatti, or say, a Faye Vincent. Nelson Doubleday was incensed over Faye Vincent's ousting. You know, so what did the owners do? They put in one of their own. We mentioned this. Bud Selig, he was an owner. He had their sensibilities. You know, and that's when the decline of baseball identity, in my opinion, started, you know, to be affected because he's the one who, you know, introduced interleague and things of that nature and did everything to fill the pockets owners best he could, alienated a whole generation of millennials because they couldn't see the playoffs. They were on too late, et cetera, and with steroids. So between being too late and steroids, you eliminated the millennial generation. And look what you're doing now to the presently newer generations. And look, Selig, he started it, and Manfred was appointed by Selig. So the owners are empowered now because they have a stooge working in their capacity and not necessarily in the best interest of baseball. Baseball, the way previous commissioners used to think. And again, I'll point to Faye Vincent and, you know, God bless them, the passing of Mr. Giamatti. But they had a little bit more integrity and baseball was first and foremost on their mind. I can't say that about Manfred. I can't say with a straight face that he has the best interests of baseball first and foremost. Otherwise, he would be telling the owners, have a little bit more restraint, you know? And again, I'll point to what they did to the minor leagues, the imperialization of the independent leagues, and what they're currently doing, because a lockout is a ploy. It's a labor ploy. It's a negotiation ploy. Players either go on strike or owners lock out. It's a ploy. So they can make all these offers that they want. Are at the table and somebody isn't taking minutes, that's not a meeting and that's not a conversation. Everything that we're talking about, players, Rays, Braves, Mets, Freddie Freeman, purely rumor being spun by the media mill. Because the two parties are not allowed to speak unless they're at the table with their representatives. And you have to be at a table. Can't be cell phone, text, this, that, and the other. They have to be face-to-face. The representatives have to be face-to-face, and minutes must be taken. This is pure labor. We think of it as sport, but here's where the business side comes in. You know, and starting with Bud Selig, and Manfred is picking up where he left off. He's a stooge of Selig. And, you know, they're destroying the game that I certainly grew up on. And it's up to me whether I want to embrace the new game the way I did the old game. That's going to be troublesome. They've made it troublesome for me over the last 20, 30 years as it is. I don't know how much more I'll put up with before, you know, I just shy away. But nobody cares when they implement these changes in the NFL. Nobody cares when they implement these changes in the NHL. Nobody cares when they implement these changes in the NBA. They only break out in a rash when it's baseball. We see baseball with different eyeballs. And take on a whole different personality when they start screwing with it, unlike we do with the other sports. And to me, Selig started the process of chipping away baseball's charisma and charm. And Manfred's got it in the left lane going 100 miles an hour.
If
you
I could jump in on that.
To the Metsian podcast, and we're so thankful you do, and Rich is going to jump on in.
No, Mike, I think you make fantastic points, as always. You know, baseball is different. It always was. You know, it's so different as a game. You know, the old cliches about no clock and blah, 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 but all very true. I don't like any of this stuff. Well, let me just say that. But when you think about it, right, other sports, and yes, I know baseball is different, and I love it for that reason. NFL, proliferating the playoffs. They expanded the playoffs again this year. NBA, half teams make the playoffs. NHL always had a lot of teams making the playoffs. You could argue this both ways. And I'm on your side, Mike. I agree. I want to keep it the way it is. But the other argument is it's evolution. It's the way all these sports are going because the money is in the postseason. So people will say, why can't baseball evolve in the same way? I respect that line of thinking, and I get it. I get that that's what the networks are willing to pay for. Think about this. You have a 14-game postseason, right? 14-team postseason. I get the MLB package, so I'm watching every game every night. I'm like a lunatic. But when I'm watching the, insert name of the team, Minnesota Twins playing the White Sox in September, and it's dead-ass empty in Minnesota. Well, maybe it's not going to be dead-ass empty in Minnesota in a 14-team playoff because they've got a shot to get in, and you got 25,000 people in the ballpark excited about baseball. I think they should be excited about baseball because it's a wonderful institution. But if that's going to get people watching and paying money and get the kids interested because, oh, geez, you know, it's a Sunday afternoon in September. I'm going to take the family to the Twins game because we've got a shot. We didn't have a shot like this a few years ago. We got a shot. If that's going to be a plank in enhancing baseball's tanking credibility, I have to say I'm not going to kick and scream about it. I don't like it. But you know what? Other sports have done it. They have to do something to try to get more fan interest. And when you think about it, all those teams that are eliminated before 4th of July, essentially, right, maybe now they have a shot. More people go to the games. More kids get into baseball. I'm throwing my hands up. It's like, whatever. You know, I don't like
Rich,
it, but I see it. Go ahead.
You're absolutely right. No, you are 100% right. I get it. I know it. You know, that's just something I got to deal with. But, you know, I think the three of us can agree, anybody born in 2022, 20 years from now, isn't going to view baseball the way we once did.
Nope.
You know, 20 years from now, 30 years from now. They'll be watching something alien to us.
I wonder about the way that I discovered the game and how, you know, 1998 was, I mean, I discovered the game before that, but 1998 was the big bang of baseball for me. And I just wonder whether, you know, I had both the Mets and the Yankees very relevant. Mike Piazza was coming over. Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa were, regardless of steroids, lighting up the news. It was a major distraction considering what was going on in the White House. So 1998 was the big bang of baseball. And Rich, I wonder, what is that type of experience like? And can that type of environment, atmosphere, collection of elements come together for a child now the same way it did for me?
It may. I mean, all right, let's play it out this way. So a couple years from now, you've got Ronald Acuna Jr. doing Ronald Acuna Jr. things. You've got Wander Franco. You've got Tatis. You've got Manny Machado. You've got these young guys who, it's not Sosa McGwire, which ultimately wasn't a good thing anyway for how they got there. You've got this young generation, and there's a lot of good young talent out there. And maybe there are some more guys. You know, Trout will still be in his prime in 2 or 3 years. So you've got these guys, and now you've got kids, more kids going to the games because the teams are in the postseason. My ear pause getting low if you heard that beep. I'm sorry, but anyway, you've got more kids going to the game. They're getting attracted to these young stars. Maybe baseball, God willing, learns how to market its young stars instead of shitting on its young stars. And maybe all these things come together, and maybe I'm a starry-eyed optimist, but perhaps we could be on the borderline of a nice rebirth. You know, it's like we say at work, right? When we don't like something, we say it's an opportunity. Maybe this 14-game playoff structure isn't an abomination. Maybe it turns into an opportunity. I don't know.
I think you make a great point regarding the 14-team schedule, and as much as everybody has been lamenting more people within the playoff ranks, I think that, you know, yeah, we bark at them for wanting to just bleed us dry money-wise, but, you know, take our money and run if there's some excitement in the sport, really. Ladies and gentlemen, once more, we thank you for listening to the Metsian Podcast, and without further ado, we are going to segue to our final word. And I want to thank Adam Spiegel, as always, for providing the 86 theme as our theme song for the Metsian Podcast. It's fantastic, and if you want to find Adam Spiegel, you can find him at Adam B. Spiegel, I believe, on both Instagram and Twitter. So head over that way. He's one of my favorite people and one of my favorite musicians. Every time I see him, I saw him last week with the band Comic Tales of Tragic Heartbreak. He's the keyboardist there, and I marvel at how fast he can sometimes play. It's ridiculous. So anyway, ladies and gentlemen, I am going to first go to Rich for his final word.
My final word is hope, and I'm going to steal 1 second here. More information on what I was talking about earlier. MLB and MLBPA met today with several Zoom calls as the owners presented a new formal proposal, including flexibility on several issues. The owners gave the union a Tuesday night deadline, don't like that, to accept the deal to get full pay and a full 162-game schedule. if the owners truly flex on the CBT and other issues, they must have flexed on the CBT because that is the big issue. Maybe tomorrow morning the players, they work it out a little bit, they massage it, and maybe tomorrow night the shit gets done and we can have baseball and Jackie Robinson Day. I'm going to say now my last word is hope because of that. I think if they could get something done tomorrow or Wednesday, they could have baseball open on, which is also Good Friday, by the way. Good Friday, April 15th, Jackie Robinson Day. The stars align to that. Let's hope that it could happen. I have hope now. That's my word, hope.
And, Rich, do you know what hope does?
Springs eternal.
That's right. That's right. before I pass it on to Mike, I just want to say once more thank you to Jeff Cohen of the Baseball and Barbecue Podcast for joining us this week. It was a pleasant surprise, and I kind of had a feeling that we would hear from Mr. Cohen. Thank you once more to Jeff Cohen of the Baseball and Barbecue Podcast. Mike, your final word.
Well, I want to thank you guys, for us getting back on, resuming what we like to do, talk baseball, talk Mets baseball. So nice talking with you guys again. Nice reaching out to Mets fans and baseball fans out there. Last word. Rich, this one's for you. If you take a walk, I'll tax your feet. The tax man. Let's see if they can get this resolved. Tax. Funny word, tax. Put it through the translator. Otherwise, all I can really say is let's go Brooklyn Cyclones. Let's go Staten Island Ferry Hawks. Those are my final words.
There you go.
Let me tell you how it will be. There's one for you, 19 for me, because I'm the tax man. Yeah, I'm the tax man. I guess I'm going to go with, I wish I could segue immediately. You know what? I will segue this. We're talking about a revolution. That is my final word. Hopefully, not only can they get something done, but they can also create a revolution within the baseball ranks. Bring these kids back into the game. Bring us back into the game. Everybody who keeps saying they will not step foot into the place after all of this. Whatever it is, whatever baseball needs to do to create more fans and not completely butcher the game for all us Altacacas, as some of my tribesmen like to say, please, by all means, get this done. It's talking about a revolution. The 11th hour, whatever it is, get this done. I will stay up till 11:59 p.m. tomorrow night. Please make sure baseball gets here by the 75th anniversary of Jackie Robinson breaking the color barrier. A great day for that to be the potential opening day. Hopefully it gets done. And ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening to the Metsian Podcast. Good night. Hope to talk actual spring training next time.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, all.